Rebel Author Podcast, where we talk about books, business, and occasionally bad words. Hello, Rebels, and welcome to episode 238 of the Rebel Author Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Dharma Kelleher, and we're talking all about how to write transgender characters. But first, to a couple of comments on Michelle's episode. AMAC Descendant said, the kit she puts together, this is for going on as a guest on podcasts. My mind is blown with the way I can help podcasters whose podcasts I want to be on. I do have a goal to be on your podcast, and I've been holding on to a Rebel story for just that purpose. Well, I can't wait. And then Michelle Glegovac said, thank you so much for having me on, Sasha. This was such a fun conversation with you. I loved having you on too. So in personal news and updates then, I am almost at the end of the necessary but grueling adulting I've had to do with the accountants, all the paperwork, the lawyers, all of this stuff that's been going on in the background. I am going to be finishing off the Kickstarter by the end of April. So it's the 10th of April as I record this. And this afternoon, I will be narrating the three spicy Kickstarter extra scenes. And I've just got six books left to annotate. And then after I have sent off the spicy scenes and the audio to the Kickstarter people, and I have done the books, the annotated books, then I am done. And I've learned so much. I'm definitely not going to do things exactly the same next time. I've done a lot of things that I really loved, but there's definitely some things that I don't want to do next time. So I'm sure I will share that probably in my annual roundup, which is coming up soon. I have also started writing. Now, you guys will have heard, if you've been around for any amount of time, you'll know that I always say I get the beginning wrong. Usually, I don't work out why until, I don't know, about 70% of the way through. This time, I got to about 8,500 words and realised everything that I've written's fine, but like kind of the next chapter would have been wrong, which I'm going to count that as an improvement. So I am pausing today, which does mean I'm going to have to catch up word counts, but I'm pausing today to re-outline just this sort of beginning bit, and it does change the tension and stakes a little bit. So I just need to take a minute to examine all of that as well. But essentially, I am on the path to vomiting words for the next few weeks, at least, I would say. I am also trying to binge read. I'm not making too much progress with that because I am having to reread my book one, House of Crimson Hearts, because I can't remember anything. And even with getting Claude to give me a summary and pull out things, actually, I just needed to reread the book. And I'm not too fast at rereading my own stuff, so that is slowing down my reading progress as well. But hopefully another couple of days and it will be done. And of course, I'm finding typos or inconsistencies, which is deeply frustrating. So, yeah. But anyway, I will correct those and all the rest of it. So what else? I think that is probably it. I am in the background preparing the second Kickstarter, which will be a little bit different, and I am excited. I've just commissioned the first of various different bits of artwork. I've also started to pull ideas for the two next things that I'm doing. So I've got one series that's going to be interconnected standalones, and then I've got another series that will be a trilogy, and I'm kind of like trying to pull information and ideas and things for both of them at the same time, which my brain's not really appreciating, and I am getting them a little bit tangled, so I think I'm gonna have to untangle them. But anyway, I basically, what I'm trying to say to you is I'm delightfully happy that I am spending so much time in fictional worlds. Not reality. Oh dear. Okay. All right. I think that's probably it from me. I don't really have anything else exciting to say. Yes. Okay. All right. So the Rebel of the Week this week is Melanie. Melanie says, in my early 20s, I was a horseback riding instructor. In the mornings, I would muck the stalls out. There are about 16 horses and 10 boarders. Another stable hand did the school horses and I did the boarders. For those non-horse people, that means shoveling the shit out, sifting through the wood shavings to separate the solid ones from the clean ones, and then adding wood shavings as needed. Since the stable's footing was made of compact sand, the wood shavings would always turn a greyish colour after a few hours, even if the shavings were still clean. The owners would get in and complain about the state of the bedding of their precious horses, so my job was a bit thankless. The stables were owned by a father and son. The father always boasted about the son being the real boss, but we all knew the old man made the decisions. Every morning he would come by my stalls and gauge the state of the bedding. Since wood shavings are costly, he would always caution me not to waste any. On his first pass, he would tell me not to add bedding unless absolutely necessary. On the second pass, he would tell me to add half a barrow to all of the stalls. Some days he would make a third pass and tell me to make sure all the stalls were white as snow. Oh my God, he sounds like hard work. My number one strength... Everybody drink is focus, so I did not like to be interrupted. My number three strength is analytical, and I'm deeply upset you didn't tell me your number two now. So you can be sure I was very much aware of what each stall needed, how to make sure the owners would be happy, especially depending on who came on which day and at what time, how much I had already used in the past days, and so on. But I also have harmony, so I never argued with him. One day, the stable hand complained about the owner's incessant changes of minds. I didn't make a peep. The owner looked me straight in the eyes and said, "Follow Melanie's example. When I tell her what to do, she nods and then she does as she pleases." Oh my God, I wanted the ground to swallow me whole. I was mortified. He just laughed it off and went on with his day. So sorry if I butchered that. What the guy said was, "Follow Melanie's example. When I tell her what to do, she nods, and then she does as she pleases." Oh, did he stop coming by to boss me about the bedding? No. But we both knew he just wanted to keep busy, and that was fine by me. Oh my God, that is absolutely priceless. I love that story so much. I love the fact that you're both aware that you just carried on doing what you wanted to do. Too fucking funny. Absolutely love it. And the fact that he was good-natured enough to recognise that and continue telling you what to do and knowing full well that you were just going to do what you want. Oh, that's tickled me pink. Honestly, it's actually tickled me pink. Okay, if you would like to be a rebel of the week, then you can do so. Please do send in your story. We are always in need. I don't know if I have to reiterate this every time, but guys, please don't sit on your stories. It can be any kind of rebellion, something big, something small, or something in between. And you can email your stories to Becca over on rebelauthorpodcast@gmail.com. A big giant thank you to all of my existing patrons. If you would like to support the show and get early access to all of the episodes, as well as bonus content, then you can from as little as $2 a month by visiting patreon.com/Sasha Black. This episode is sponsored by Fictionary. Fictionary is software that is brilliant at helping you systematically work through your own developmental edit. The software works well on its own, but if you want to guarantee your success, Storyteller Premium users also get access to the Fictionary Live guided editing courses. The amazing certified story coach editors are there to assign tasks, answer questions, and generally keep you on track. After every session, you'll have clear, practical steps to make your manuscript even more amazing. Plus, you'll be part of a group of writers who are all working towards the same goal that you are, which is powerful stuff. I am also pleased to announce that I am offering all listeners 25% off Storyteller Premium, and the certification for the Certified Editor Program with the code REBEL25. So that's all caps, REBEL25. That's it from me. Let's get on with the episode. Hello and welcome to the Rebel Author Podcast. Today I am joined by Dharma Kelleher. Dharma writes crime thrillers where queer women kick ass. As the most prolific transgender author in her genre, She entertains readers with action-packed stories and a diverse cast of characters, while exploring themes of justice, trauma, community, and moral conflict. Hello and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I've always wanted, ever since I discovered the podcast 4 years ago, I wanted to be on this podcast because I just fell in love with you. I mean, oh.
Oh, thank you. And now not only are you on the podcast, you're joined by two fluffy kitties in the background, one either side of me, and I'm sure they're going to cause chaos. They usually do when I'm on a show. But before we kind of dive into our topic today, would you like to tell everyone a little bit about you and your journey? Like, how did you get to where you are? And yeah, just dive in.
I started writing when I was a teenager, a very, very long time ago in a city far, far away. And I started writing literally on a manual Smith Corona typewriter because this was back around like 1978, 1979,
That's
long time ago.
amazing.
And so I was writing these crazy little short stories, and I was poring over Writer's Market to looking for where I could place these stories and all this stuff. And I kept doing that through college, and then life intervened, and I couldn't ignore my gender dysphoria anymore, and my life just went upside down. And then in 2007, someone told me about NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, and I'm like, yeah, I used to write stories. I loved doing that. I could write a book, I think. And I did it. This was in 2007. I spent the next several years learning the craft of writing. And eventually I got an agent because that was the dream, go through the agent, get a big contract with one of the big publishers and everything like that. And I got a two-book deal with an imprint of Random House. And then I decided I wanted to do it myself. I wanted to be indie because I hated the covers that they had, and they wanted to end that series at two books. And I'm like, nope, not going to do it. So that's my journey in a nutshell.
And now you are indie
I am.
and you're focusing on direct sales as well, aren't
I
you?
am. Yeah. I mean, it's. I guess I'm just like. I like to control. That's one of my issues is I want to control everything. No, because I like that I get paid right away within a couple of days instead of a couple of months. And I just like the direct interaction with my customers, my readers. So
What have you learned from your Shopify experience, and have you encountered any difficulties? Because I also am doing Shopify, and it's wonderful, but it also has some issues.
I've run into some challenges, but nothing that I haven't been able to overcome. There are still people that just want to buy from a retailer like Amazon or Kobo or Apple or whoever. But for the most part, it's been pretty good. I don't know what issues you've run into, but.
Well, for me, the biggest one was cash flow, because my Shopify does a few grand every month. And because it's doing a few grand every month, that first month, I didn't have a few grand to invest in the few grand. Because the thing that people forget with Shopify, unlike Ingram Spark and Amazon, we pay for the printing and the shipping the moment somebody orders. We get charged for that. Whereas we don't receive the money for like 5 days or whatever the settings are.
That's
So.
where I am dealing with a little bit of that, mostly because, yeah, between the printing and because of like a week ago, I ran out of one of my titles, the first book in a series, no less. So, buying the paperback bundle was like suddenly temporarily out of stock. I'm like, ah. And of course, it takes a couple of weeks before you can get stock back in again.
So are you
But
handling shipping as well?
oh yeah, I
Oh,
sign them
wow.
and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot. How often do you have to go to the post office?
About 3 times a week.
Shit, that. Yeah. Yeah, see, this is the one thing stopping me do TikTok shop, because I like get people saying, can you not do TikTok shop? Can you not do TikTok shop? But at the moment, Book Vault fulfill the majority. So if you could split yours and do signed and then do just standard stock at a slightly cheaper price through Book Vault, and you wouldn't have to handle the shipping.
True, I could. I thought about that, and of course, then I'm thinking on the like the variant, because each book, I break it down by variant, so they can click on the format that they want, the ebook, and I'm like, it might add just so many that it's like information overload.
Yeah.
Because I do ebook, paperback, and hardcover, and I'm now working on the audiobooks, and I'm like, so if I have two different options for the paperback and two different options for the hardcover, it just might be overload.
Might
So
be, or you might find that you get more sales.
that's true. That's currently right now, a big part of what's driving my sales is Facebook ads.
So talk to me
And right
about
now
that.
I'm my campaigns are right now focused in the US. So that keeps it a little bit simpler, so I don't have to worry about the overseas shipping issue. But it's my return on investment is about 2.0, or I get $2 for every $1 I spend.
That's
This
amazing.
month is a little bit lower. I don't know.
I'm actually, so be relieved or reassured. A lot of people I know are seeing slightly lower sales, slightly lower conversion, slightly lower everything. This is across everything. So I don't know. I wouldn't worry too much about that.
I'm not worried. I'm like, okay, it's just kind of the natural ebbs and flows and everything. Because I st really started hitting it hard in January, and it was just like, wah! And I'm like, wow, this is it. And then mid-February, I'm like, oh, what am I doing wrong? And I listen to Mallory Cooper does her Lunch with Mal on Thursdays, and she's been mentioning, yeah, since mid-February things have been kind of a slump. So I know it's not just me. I am still experimenting with different things, but I'm like starting to do a little video ads and things like that. So I'm just playing it, but I'm keeping my confidence high, my positivity high. And I just this morning I started to do those Miracle Mornings by that guy Elrod or whatever is it, and so I'm just doing what I gotta do.
Amazing. Well, we're not actually here to talk about Shopify. We're actually here to talk about transgender characters and writing transgender characters and the craft of it, and diversity as well. So I wondered if, before we dive into the topic, can we start maybe with like some definitions? Because I think there's a lot of language that maybe is intimidating if people don't know what the words mean. So I don't know, like you can just throw them at me, but I wondered if you could talk through some of the definitions.
All right. Let's start with the basics. The word transgender simply means one's gender identity is different than what was assigned at birth. It's that simple. And I should clarify to a lot of people, because a lot of cisgender people, which I'll define later, get a little tripped up a lot. Transgender is an adjective, it's not a verb, and it's not a noun. So there's no ED on the end. And same with cisgender. And cisgender means that your gender identity matches the gender or sex you were assigned at birth. And so, and it just simply, it's comparable to homosexual and heterosexual, or straight and gay. But straight refers to sexuality. Cisgender refers to gender identity. And then there's non-binary, which some people are like, wait, what? And non-binary simply means that a person doesn't identify as exclusively male or female. They're just kind of somewhere in the middle. It's comparable to being pansexual or bisexual. It means that you're not exclusively this or that. You're just somewhere in the middle. It's a spectrum. And I transitioned back in the late 80s, early 90s. And in Georgia, which is a very rural right-wing state even back then. And it was kind of tricky. And so I at the time I'd never even heard of non-binary. So when I started hearing about it, I'm like, how can someone be non-binary? And I realized that someone else knows their gender identity better than I know their gender identity. So I'm like, okay, if that's who they are, if they prefer they them pronouns, that works for me. I'm not here to dictate their gender.
And I think that's the case with a lot of things like mental health or sexuality or any like somebody else's existence in whatever frame that that looks like is actually none of our fucking business. Like we should just be more accepting of how people present to us and tell us that they are presenting as, right? Like because what I do in the bedroom or what I do in my house or what I do on the street isn't really anyone else's business, or how I look or all the rest of it. But I think too often we do place judgment on other people and we all do it. We all
Yeah,
do it and we
we
all
do.
have to
I catch
learn.
myself like, ooh, why did I do that?
Right, exactly. And like that's really honest of you to say, when you first encountered the term non-binary. Like we all learn. And yeah, I think that's amazing. Okay, so why is it important that we have, sorry, are there any other terms or is that kind
Yeah,
of.
let's dead name. A dead name is the name that we were assigned at birth or prior to transition. And it is also a verb, so to dead name someone is to use the name that they are not currently using. So, and it's usually especially if it's intentional, it's used as a form of violence.
That is
Verbal
disgusting,
violence, so
isn't it?
yeah.
And okay, are there any others, or have we kind of
I
captured a few?
think we've captured them pretty
Okay.
much. There may be some other terms
As we come up, maybe
as I
I'll
get.
try.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely.
Okay, so I mean, I think we all are at the point, or I hope the majority of us are at the point where we recognize that representation is important, but do we know why it's important? Like, perhaps can you explain why representation is so important? Because I do think we have moved as a community, like to recognize that representation is important.
Well, I think a part of it is one, people in marginalized groups need to be able to see themselves reflected in books and movies and television shows and media, basically. They because it's just a sense of I am somebody. It's a feeling of validity. And not only represented, but represented with agency, because that's a big thing. A lot of the, even today, a lot of the representations of trans characters, particularly by cisgender authors, are sex worker, crime victim, often murder victim, or the one that really gets me is serial killer or criminal or whatever. And think Silence of the Lambs and all that stuff. And the reason proper representation matters is other people outside of these communities see these representations and they think that's reality when nothing could be further from the truth.
So, okay, and I'm just going to be like facetious and just play a devil's advocate. Does that mean we can never have a diverse character, whatever that diversity be, as a villain?
Okay, no. But here's the thing. When 90% or in fact I got statistics to back let's see here, where is it? Okay, here we go. All right, so GLAAD, the GLAAD, which is about representation of queer people in media. They did a study of trans representation in media, primarily in television. And they found that 40% of the representation was trans people as victims. 21% of the time cast as killers or villains. And 20% of the time the profession is that of sex worker. And it's not to say that you can't, but when you do portray the sole trans character in your story as a villain, as especially as a killer, as a threat to women and children, that reinforces the harm that we are experiencing in the transgender community. It increases the violence that we experience. It increases the harassment that we experience. It affects the anti-transgender legislation that we've been experiencing here. Being able to access basic life-saving health care, being able to use a public restroom without fear of either being assaulted or arrested. And this affects cisgender people too, because a lot of cisgender women, butch, lesbians and things, have been harassed and attacked because somebody thought that they were transgender.
Yeah,
and the fact so is, it shouldn't matter.
Yeah, you mean more mask-presenting lesbians.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I mean, my wife often gets called sir, and it makes me want to fucking nut people. Like, I get more cross about it than she does. Like, she's, because she has really short hair, so she's used to it. But I literally, like, it, like, flicks a switch and I just see red. And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, really? You know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
So we get this all the fucking time.
Yeah.
And it's just, we're just trying to live our lives. And so when you reinforce these negative stereotypes, it furthers the harm that we experience. So the question you have to ask is, do you want to be furthering the harm that we're experiencing, or are you simply wanting to represent the trans community in a positive way? And that doesn't mean you have to portray these angelic, perfect trans characters that are Dudley Do-Good or something like that, but
also because no one's going to read that because it's boring conflict.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I mean, my latest series is about a transgender woman who is a goth vigilante. So she is kind of a criminal in a sense. I mean, she kills people, but people that deserve it. But also realize that I'm doing it from the context of someone who has lived experience as a trans person.
Yeah.
So I know where the subtle boundaries are. And also have a lot of more trans representation in my work too.
Sorry, this just reminds me. I saw on social media, and I wish I hadn't seen it, but I couldn't unsee it, somebody who will remain nameless calling out my Ruby Roebuck, saying that what was the phrasing? Misrepresentation. It wasn't accurate representation. And I'd fetishized lesbians. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I've literally spent over half of my life living like this. Like, don't you fucking dare. But anyway, like, hey, social media, isn't it such a wonderful place?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Anyway. And I think so. The other thing that I wanted to sort of go back to the first thing that you said, I still remember the first time I read a book with a queer lesbian couple and the emotional reaction that I had to reading that was so visceral in a way that, you know, I can consume straight romance and just gobble them like Cookie Monster, you know, that just they're nothing books. Not that, you know, I don't mean that in a derogatory way that they're nothing books, but I don't feel anything about them.
Right.
So they're great stories and I enjoy reading them and yay for the characters at the end, but I don't give a shit, you know, like I want to give a shit about the characters. And the only way I can do that is when I see me or feel, you know, like,
right.
Yeah. Connect in that way.
To see yourself represented on the page.
Right.
Because
exactly.
That is important.
So I think the other thing I wanted to ask you, which I don't think I prepared you for this, but and this is more of a subjective question. How
Sure.
do you feel, or like, what is your desire as a reader rather than an author? Like, is it, how much do you want to read books where the concept of the story is about being transgender
Ah, that's a good one. Yeah.
versus stories where the character just is transgender and it's about a completely different, something else? Because I have stronger
Exactly.
feelings about that. So I wanted to know what you
Yeah,
think.
I mean, one of the things when I started writing first lesbian characters and then trans characters, because I'm both, is I didn't want it to be about them being trans. I didn't want their being trans to be the most interesting thing about them. I'm not talking of, my stories don't primarily focus on their transition or hormones or surgery or makeup or all this stuff. I mean, yeah, we kind of go through that. But I wanted it not to be focused on their transness, but rather focused on whatever the story is about. So I write crime thrillers, so it's about finding justice, whatever that means in the context of the story. But I also bring in, I also pull in issues where what makes it unique from a trans experience, though.
That's really interesting. Do
So I
you,
try to find that balance.
and what about you as a reader?
And as a reader, I like it where, yeah, because I mean, when I first came out, and the first books I was reading were lesbian, like Annie on My Mind and all this stuff. It was all about coming out and falling in love and blah, blah, blah. And that was fine for a while, but then I'm like, okay, I want to just read books where the main character is doing something other than it being about them les being a lesbian. So when I found Catherine D. Forrest's series, mystery ser murder mystery series, where it's not about her being a lesbian, but it's about solving crimes, I'm like, yes, this is what I wanted.
Yeah, I feel like we need both in the community. Like for
Yes.
me, like if we had those books when I was a baby gay, then like I would have read them, right? Like, but now as somebody who's been queer the majority of her life, like I don't want to read about coming out anymore because I'm not doing that. I don't, do you
Right.
like, do you have, is that the, do you have baby trans or like what is that? Do you say, how, what's
Yeah.
the right word for that? Because we would say baby gay.
Baby trans is good. Yeah,
That
like
works. Okay, cool. So yeah, like obviously, people who are newly transitioning would want that, but we also need stories where it's almost just not, it's just a little part of them, right? So we need
right,
both.
exactly.
Yeah,
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, I'll throw in, I may or may not throw in a like a flashback scene that refers to, or even a reference to when they transitioned or something like that. But other than that, it's focused on the plot of the story, finding the bad guy in the my Bounty Hunter series. It's like, okay, the story is focused on where is this fugitive and how is she going to find him and how are they hiding and all that stuff, so.
Okay, so let's just, talk about the elephant in the room. I'm cisgender, and therefore, should I be including trans characters? I can write from a queer person's perspective quite well, but can we, how do we do that? How do we do it credibly? How do we do it with respect? How do we do it by not tread on the toes of people who have lived experience as a transgender
Right.
person. Like, how do we do that and not fuck it up, basically? To put it
I
bluntly.
know, because about a year ago, a book came out by a dear friend of mine, and it's gotten a lot of acclaim and awards and everything like that. And I was reading it, and I'm like, oh, here's a trans character. And she's a sex worker, of course. And I know it wasn't, I mean, if I had been writing a story and I have one black character, and oh, they're a gangbanger, or oh, they're some stereotype, like, So the way I suggest people to do this is, first of all, read books by transgender authors. And there are a lot of us out there. There's only a few of us in crime fiction, but there are plenty of,
even in crime fiction. There's a crap ton in YA at the moment.
There's a crap ton in YA. Maya Kobabi's Genderqueer is an amazing graphic novel that's been banned in several places because, oh no, there's a depiction of someone giving a blowjob to a vibrator or something like that, dildo. It's like not even actual sex parts. It's like, but there are, if you Google transgender authors and specify a genre, if you're looking for a specific genre, I mean, in crime fiction alone, there's myself, there's Renee James, who just recently won an award. There is Robin Geigel, who writes legal thrillers. She just won an award. I'm still waiting on my award. I don't know. there is Jennifer Finney Boylan, recently co-wrote a book with Jodi Picoult, Mad Honey, great book. I enjoyed it. And so there's, you know, there are a lot of us out there. So just Google it. So read books by trans authors. See how we represent ourselves. There's also a documentary on Netflix called Disclosure. And it focuses on the representation of trans people primarily in movies and television, but the same concepts apply in literary fiction as well, literary world in books. And so I highly recommend, because then at least you get aware of, okay, this is what I shouldn't do, or this is how trans people have been represented in the past, and these are the landmines that I should avoid, because you don't want to cause harm to the trans community. We got enough to deal with as it is, and you don't want to deal with blowback if you get something wrong. But also another way is to hire a sensitivity reader. And that's not someone that says, don't do this, don't do that, but rather someone that says, okay, this portrayal or this scene, hits on some tropes that could be potentially harmful. Here's another way that you might be able to work it. So it even makes the story even better. So we want characters with agency, you know? Not just the murder victim, not just the sex worker,
tell me more about that. Like, what does that mean to you? Like, what does a character with agency look like? Like, yeah.
They're not simply a victim, that they have the ability to decide the course of their lives. I don't know.
No.
But they're not just a victim. They're not just...
They can advocate for themselves.
They can advocate. Perfect, yes. what are words? It's too early in the morning
today. I'm sorry. It's okay. Okay, so you mentioned in there, like, some harmful things. Uh-huh. Like, can we talk about that? Like, what are some harmful things that we should avoid? Like, are there any tropes or stereotypes in particular? You mentioned a few times, like, sex worker. So I'm assuming that's probably one of at the top of the pile that's a harmful.
And it's not to say that there aren't trans sex workers, but we do a lot of other professions too. We're accountants and lawyers and doctors and every profession, IT workers and everything. So step out of the little box and create a little variety for your characters. Make them more three-dimensional, because in making them more three-dimensional, you're making them more interesting to your readers. Because if you make them just a sex worker, they're just kind of a throwaway character. And the other, I mean, I mentioned as the murder victim. And yes, the violence, especially in the past few years against the trans community, is very real and it needs to be addressed. But in addition to the realistic, or I don't know, the negative portrayals, we also need something that's more inspirational too. Where we have the agency. Because in my book that's coming out in a couple of months, I dive deep into the violence against the trans community. But that's one out of a dozen books that I've written. Most of them don't deal with that directly. So I'm just dealing with all the other stuff going on in the story. So, you know, if you can avoid some of the things like that, and especially the killer, serial killer, you know, like the Silence of the Lambs or Dial M for Murder or all these different portrayals where, and a certain YA author turned crime fiction author has been negative portray, one of her recent books has portrayed a cross-dresser as the serial killer. I'm like, really? Really?
Is this She Who Shall Not Be Named? Is that who
this
we're talking
is
about?
She Who Shall Not Be Named.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. She went there?
She went there. Oh, yeah. And then, of course, in another one of the other books, she's portraying a TERF. That's another term.
That's a new word.
TERF.
Let's define that one.
Let's define it. TERF is, it means trans exclusionary radical feminist. And it's not the trans community that came up with this. This came out of the radical feminist community, because they're trans inclusive and trans exclusive.
Okay, so just because that's okay. A lot for people.
I know,
just,
I know.
Let's just explain what that
we'll
means.
Pick it apart. Okay, so basically, it means someone who claims to identify as a feminist, but who doesn't see trans women as women, who doesn't see trans men as men, who doesn't think that non-binary people exist. And a lot of these people are spreading harmful misinformation about the trans community, much in the way that the right-wing talking heads back in the 80s and 90s were spreading misinformation about the queer community, that were preying on young people, that were trying to convert them and groom them, and all these lies. The same stuff is going on with the trans community right now. And so She Who Shall Not Be Named, I don't want to dwell on her because I don't want to give her any more recognition, but she's been using her celebrity.
A very bad word then. I nearly said a very bad word and I stopped myself.
I used an
adjective today as well.
We're just trying to live our life, and some people are just using their platforms to cause us more harm. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of the anti She Who Shall Not Be Named, because I'm doing the opposite.
How do you just, and I really don't want to give this any more airtime, but just as a very quick, do you separate the art from the artist?
I don't.
Interesting.
I'm not saying that to shame people that do. I personally don't, because particularly if they're still alive and if supporting that artist, supporting their art, means that they're using that money to further harm against my community. Because that's what's going on, is we're being harmed. You know, innocent people are being harmed. Teenagers are being murdered and forced to suicide because of this shit.
So let's talk about those challenges. So for somebody who's cisgender, how do they even approach effectively depicting those experiences and challenges faced by transgender characters? Should they even be attempting to do that when they include a trans character? You know, how do they do it sensitively without sensationalizing it or exploiting your community?
It's certainly a gray area. And I, because like in Mad Honey, it deals with it. The main character, or the character that is trans, is killed early on in the story. And it's later revealed in the story that this character is trans. And of course, Jennifer Finney Boylan is a trans author, so I give her some latitude. And I write violence against trans people in a few of my stories too. It's a gray area. There's no hard defined line. I strongly suggest getting a sensitivity reader to who is trans, who can look it over and say, here are some issues. You might want to try this differently. And at least I can give you some guidance, because if you haven't had the trans experience, it sounds like a Disney ride. Come to the trans experience. But if you haven't had that lived experience, it's hard to know the subtleties. And it's like me as a white person using the N-word to describe a, and I try very hard to, I try very hard. I tend to avoid using that word in any context. Because I feel I don't have the right to use that word. I don't have the lived experience to use it properly. And so similarly, when you lack that lived experience, you run the risk of running afoul of some people that are very sensitive because of the very real harm that we're experiencing. Because a lot of us are having visions of 1930s Germany, because we're being imprisoned, we're denied our identities, and so we're just trying to live our lives in things that feel like they're reinforcing the harm we're going to speak out about.
How do you navigate in your own work, or perhaps how have you seen other trans authors navigate the balance between like educating readers without preaching or making the story or killing the story
I
essentially
know,
because it's too
exactly.
preachy?
That's always tough, and I have a tendency, I fear that I tend to get a little preachy sometimes because I get so passionate about this, because it is a very emotional topic to us, especially now. I mean, 5, 10 years ago, it wasn't as big of a deal, because people weren't coming after us the way that they are now. I try to pull. I've been accused of being too on the nose on more than one occasion and preaching, but I try to limit that a little bit. It's a balancing act. I don't
Any
know.
kind of craft advice, you know, how much of the plot goes towards it? You mentioned earlier that like in some of your books, you try to make the story about the story and not the transgender identity, but that you try to show honest depictions in smaller little ways. Could you talk maybe a
Right.
little bit about like what that looks like in practice?
In my first book, well, first trans book, Chaser, it's about a professional bounty hunter who happens to be trans. And the plot of the story is there's a girl who has disappeared. She's wanted for murdering her own mother, inspired by real events. And she's disappeared, and Jinx, the main character of the story, is assigned to return her to custody to face her hearing and trial and everything. Early on in the story, she gets publicly outed by the local alternative weekly newspaper, and she gets fired from the bail bond agent that she currently works with, and she gets harassment. But that's not the primary gist of the story. The story is she's trying to locate this girl. In two of my dozen or so novels, I deal more directly with the trans issues. Turf Wars, spelled TERF, Turf Wars, and then my recent one, A Plague of Grackles. But for the most part, it's just like I don't make a big deal out of it. And I know sometimes readers are, well, how do I convey that they're trans if I'm not talking about hormones or transition or genitals or any of the markers or big hands, for women or they're, And I think part of one of the things is you can do have more than one trans character. You know, back in the day, Will and Grace was a popular TV show, and they had Will, who was a very straight acting gay man, like heteronormative, whatever they wanted to call it. And then there was Jack, who was very flamboyant. And I liked that because it showed a little bit of variety. Because we're not monolithic.
Yeah, so one of my principles in my own books is that everyone is queer. Nobody is straight. Like, I literally refuse to write, pretty much refuse to write a straight character. I'm trying to think if anybody is straight, and I don't think I've made anybody explicitly straight. And I don't think I realized I was doing that until you just said that. But like, pretty much everybody is queer somewhere, and maybe they've only had one kiss and a slight crush, but all the way down to somebody who's like super uber openly gay or whatever queer. But yeah, I try to have everyone is queer, because like every fucking book I read, everybody is straight. So how about I'm gonna put some everybody is queer out into
I
the
know exactly.
world then?
I've gotten reviews where someone say, "Why are all the characters queer?" I'm like,
Yeah.
"Well, because we have queer friends, you know."
Yeah. But
Safety numbers.
I don't know if you've ever read any Katie Robert, but
No, I
Katie Robert
haven't.
books, pretty much everybody's queer. Not exclusively, but in some of the series, 100%, like pretty much everyone is queer. So yeah, I love it. Okay, so just like to round off this conversation then, do you have any resources? Like, where can authors go if they would like to maybe educate themselves, or build up to the confidence to writing some queer trans characters? Like, where can they find sensitivity readers? Like all of the things.
I mean, there used to be like kind of a few resources where they listed sensitivity readers and their specialty, whether it was like people of color or people that are trans or queer or whatever. I don't think they are kept up anymore. A few years ago, I wrote a character that was intersex, and I am not intersex, and that's another word that probably needs to be defined. Intersex means that someone has some sort of physical characteristics of both sexes. It may be genetic, it may be genital, it may be any number of things, but it's a broad category. And I had no experience with that. So I just went on Facebook and said, "Hey, I'm trying to write a intersex character. I need input from people who have this lived experience." And I got a few people, and I paid them for their expertise. Because there were some areas that I had made assumptions that I didn't realize I was making assumptions. So just reach out to people. If you want to read more trans authors, Google it or reach out on social media and say, "Hey, I'm looking for more trans authors." Look for hashtags. Disclosure, the documentary I mentioned earlier, is another great resource on Netflix. I highly recommend it. And just read more trans authors.
Amazing. Well, this is the Rebel Author Podcast. So tell everyone about a time you unleashed your inner rebel.
For most of, for my all up until I transitioned, I was always the good kid. And then everything went boom. Full on rebel. But I think about 26 years ago, almost 26 years ago, my wife and I were dating, and we're both transgender, and I had transitioned prior to her. I mean, I had only known her as Eileen, but she hadn't had her surgery and hadn't had her gender markers on her ID changed, especially on her birth certificate. And this was before gay marriage became legal in the United States, and we wanted to get married. And there was a loophole because, according to all of my documentation, I was female, even my birth certificate. And her documentation, her birth certificate read male. So in Arizona, We went to the county clerk's office and applied for our marriage license. Sorry. Sorry about that. And so we said, we want to get a marriage license. We say, well, we two women can't get married here in Arizona. And I said, we showed the paperwork, a birth certificate. She said, oh, okay, let me get my supervisor. So we had to wait an hour for the supervisor to come back from lunch. And then we presented all the documents. They said, okay, yeah, we can issue a marriage certificate. And so then they filled out all the forms and everything like that and presented and say, okay, make sure that everything's correct. And they put her dead name, my wife's dead name on it. I'm like, we're like, that's not her name. She had legally changed her name to Eileen. I'm like, this isn't her name. They said, well, we can't put two women's names on the marriage certificate. And my wife, this is the story we laugh about to this day. She said, if my name were Farkle, could you put that name on there? Where's the list of names that can and can't be put on the license or the license? And she thought about that. And I'm like, yeah, okay. So we were among the first lesbian legally married couples in the United States.
So just on the legal front, that I find that fascinating. Did you have to get divorced to get remarried?
We didn't get remarried.
Because she hadn't legally changed her identity, her gender marker, right?
Yeah.
So in the I thought in the UK, I've got some trans friends and they had to get divorced to get remarried when our friend changed their identity on the birth certificate. So that was like a wild ride. But remember, the laws are not the same in the UK.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm trying to think, divorce from who? Now, technically, when I was up until about a week before we got married, I was still legally married to my ex-husband because the divorce hadn't gone through.
Oh, my goodness me.
The court hearing was on a Monday, and my Eileen and I got married on the following Saturday.
Oh,
we've been separated for over a year, and it wasn't like I was sneaking around. My wife knew everything. It just took a long time for the legal stuff to get through.
As it always does.
As it always does. Yeah. And it almost didn't happen because his lawyer was late to the courthouse with the paperwork.
Oh, my goodness me. I love that rebellion. That's made my day. I absolutely love it. Would you like to tell everyone where they can find out more about you, your books, and anything else you'd like to add?
You can find me and my books at dharmakelleher.com. And that's dharmakelleher. Everybody forgets the H's. So. But and I'm also on Facebook, I'm on Threads, I'm sometimes on TikTok and Instagram. So
amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And of course, a giant thank you to all of the show's listeners and all of the show's patrons. If you would like to get early access to all of the episodes, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/Sasha Black. I'm Sasha Black. You are listening to Dharma Kelleher, and this was the Rebel Author Podcast. Join me next week when I will be chatting with Liz Lincoln all about how to combat burnout. Don't forget to tune in and subscribe on your podcatcher. And when you have a moment, please leave a review.